Another House Republican heads for the exits. A new report on state pharmacy benefit manager regulation is released by the Government Accountability Office. And a House committee prepares to question the CEO of the United Health Group regarding the Change Healthcare cyber attack. For the week of April 22nd, 2024, from Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C., this is Health on the Hill. I'm Matt Duckworth.
About how the specific cyber attack occurred, I will note UnitedHealth briefed ENC members recently on the matter and have committed to testifying at a future hearing. Healthcare cybersecurity was already a concern before the change attack, and I look forward to today's
kicking off this week's episode with news from Congress, where last week, bipartisan leadership of the House Energy and Commerce Committee sent a letter to United Health Group seeking information about the Change Healthcare cyber attack. The letter read, quote, "The healthcare system is rapidly consolidating at virtually every level, creating fewer redundancies and more vulnerability to the entire system if an entity with significant market share at any level of the system is compromised," unquote. The committee leaders went on to say, quote, "In order to understand better the steps United Health has taken to address this situation, we request information about the impact of the cyber attack, the actions the company is taking to secure its systems, and the outreach to the healthcare community in the aftermath," unquote. United Health CEO Andrew Witty will testify before the Energy and Commerce Committee's Oversight and Investigations Subcommittee in a hearing scheduled for May 1st to discuss the cyber attack and how it's impacted patients and providers. Last week, the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee ranking member Bill Cassidy, a Republican from Louisiana, sent a letter to the Food and Drug Administration criticizing the agency's decision in a September 2022 guidance to classify clinical decision support software as a medical device and to subject software developers to the FDA's regulatory process. Cassidy argues that the move is not aligned with the agency's statutory authority, highlighting that Congress excluded CDS software from being categorized as a medical device in the 21st Century Cures Act. He expresses concerns about the implications of increased oversight of CDS on patient access to innovative medical technology, and notes that the FDA made the change without providing stakeholders an opportunity to submit feedback on the potential impacts of the policy. The letter read, quote, "This guidance unnecessarily calls into question the safety of these tools and expands the universe of entities regulated by the FDA, many of which are small provider practices who have developed their own CDS tools. FDA's guidance not only runs contrary to an explicit congressional directive, but may jeopardize access to advanced tools that improve patient care," unquote. More from the mailbag, where Representative Vern Buchanan, a Republican from Florida and chair of the Ways and Means Subcommittee on Health, sent a letter last week to the Medicare Payment Advisory Commission, or MedPAC, encouraging the commission to rethink its approach to evaluating digital health tools and the use of artificial intelligence in the Medicare program. Buchanan expresses concerns that MedPAC's current approach could punish providers for using and innovators for developing digital health tools that improve health outcomes and control costs. Buchanan argues that, quote, "For Medicare to meaningfully transition to value-based care, payment policies need to maximize efficiencies in care delivery and enhance patient safety using digital health tools," unquote. The letter highlights the quadruple aim of digital health tools and strongly encourages MedPAC to, quote, "incorporate digital health tools into future evaluations of Medicare policy recommendations and, in partnership with stakeholders impacted by Medicare policy, ensure that its evaluations and recommendations related to digital health are inclusive of each of the quadruple aims," unquote.
On Medicare at $35. But here's the thing. Insulin shouldn't be expensive for anybody. This is a 100-year-old drug. When it was created, the patent was sold for $1. And pharmaceutical companies have been engaged in price gouging simply because they could. And I'm glad we
were able to... That was the voice of Senator Raphael Warnock, a Democrat from Georgia, who joined his colleagues Jean Shaheen, a Democrat from New Hampshire, and Elizabeth Warren, a Democrat from Massachusetts, in recently sending a letter to the president and CEO of Novo Nordisk regarding the company's recent decision to discontinue production of Levemir, one of three long-acting insulin products on the market. The letter highlights that access to affordable, in-demand biosimilar insulins will be further restricted by the discontinuation and the creation of significant barriers to demonstrating biosimilarity without a reference sample. The lawmakers asked Novo Nordisk about the supply chain constraints and issues related to formulary placement that led to the discontinuation of Levemir, and about how the company plans to ensure patient access to similar long-acting insulin products at similar cost sharing without gaps in coverage.
The PBMs own the insurance companies that their rebates are going to. It's self-integrated. So you're rebating yourself. That is just, wow, great business model. And we wonder why prices are high to our consumers. And this is
last week, the Government Accountability Office released a new report examining five states' regulation of pharmacy benefit managers, or PBMs. Each of the five states selected for review, including Arkansas, California, Louisiana, Maine, and New York, have enacted a variety of laws to regulate PBMs, including fiduciary or duty of care requirements, drug pricing and pharmacy reimbursement requirements, transparency requirements, and pharmacy network and access requirements. The regulators interviewed by GAO generally agreed that broad regulatory authority was more effective than enacting specific statutory provisions, and also stressed the need for robust enforcement of PBM laws and effective penalties to enforce them. Also last week, the Congressional Budget Office released a new report summarizing recent research findings about accountable care organizations and the factors that have contributed to or limited their ability to achieve net budgetary savings for the Medicare program. The analysis found that certain types of ACOs are associated with greater savings, including ACOs led by independent physician groups, ACOs with a larger proportion of primary care providers, and ACOs whose initial baseline spending was higher than the regional average. CBO also outlines the factors that limit the savings for Medicare ACOs, including weak incentives for ACOs to reduce spending, a lack of the resources necessary for providers to participate in ACO models, and providers' ability to selectively enter and exit the program on the basis of the financial benefits or losses they anticipate from participating.
It's a much different ask to say that now we have the license and the ability to practice medicine without having gone to medical school. Physicians have to know what to do when nobody knows what to do. They have to make decisions, and those decisions are based on the experience that they get in medical school and residency.
Winding down today, where Oregon has become the first state in the nation to legally allow physician assistants to use the title physician associate on their license. Other states, including Michigan and South Carolina, are considering similar measures. The change is opposed by the American Medical Association and other physician groups who have expressed concerns about patient confusion around the scope of practice. Oregon's new law will take effect on June 6th.
says in part, quote, the busy schedule of serving in and running for Congress has taken a toll. The unrepeatable season of life we are in, where our kids are still young and at home, is something I want to be more present for.
Final news today. Representative Jake LaTourneur, a Republican from Kansas, has announced that he will not seek re-election this November. LaTourneur has served in Congress since 2021 and currently sits on the Homeland Security, Oversight and Reform, and Science, Space, and Technology Committees. A running list of members of Congress who are retiring or seeking other office can be found in our weekly written policy briefing on the news page of our website at www.hhs.com.
The meeting will come to order. Welcome to the Ways and Means Committee organizing meeting for the 118th Congress.
The Committee on Energy and Commerce will come to order. The chair recognizes herself for an opening statement.
And it's a pleasure to bring together the first meeting of the Finance Committee in the 118th Congress.
Good morning. The Senate Committee on Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions will come to order. All right, we did it.
We end each week's episode with a call to order, where we lightning round congressional meetings and hearings in the near future that you need to know about. First, on Tuesday, April 30th at 10:30 a.m., the House Appropriations Subcommittee on Labor, Health, and Human Services and Education hosts a Member Day hearing. Second, on Wednesday, May 1st at 2 p.m., the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations convenes a hearing to discuss the Change Healthcare cyber attack with the Chief Executive Officer of United Health Group, Andrew Witte. And last, on Wednesday, May 1st, the House Energy and Commerce Subcommittee on Oversight and Investigations and Subcommittee on Health holds a hearing to discuss gain-of-function research with EcoHealth Alliance President Dr. Peter Desick. The time of this hearing has yet to be determined. Thanks again for tuning into this week's episode of Health on the Hill, brought to you by Heart Health Strategies. For more information on this week's healthcare happenings in the administration and on Capitol Hill, you can visit our website at hhs.com and click on the news section at the top of the page. You can subscribe anywhere you get your podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SoundCloud. Did we miss a story you wanted to hear this week? If so, email me at mduckworth@hhs.com, and we may include it in our next episode. Have a great week, and stay healthy.